Some Part of Me Must Have Died, written by Ragsheim and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom, The Locked Tomb. Warnings for gun violence, knife violence, blood, suicide, infant temporary death, canon adult permanent death, allusions to canon typical reverent parent chittery, references to the crash flu. When the time comes, Wake's hand doesn't waver. It's almost anticlimactic. The knife goes in, the blood comes out, the baby dies. And the rock remains unmoved. Wake waits a minute before screaming, a raw, unfiltered sound. She can hear scuffles and yells beyond the lift she took down to get here. She jammed it, but they're figuring it out. Those damn wizards always seem to figure it out. She has a few minutes, maybe. She doesn't know what to do. Wake stands, the dead child rolling off her lap to hit the floor with a crunch that turns her stomach. It's not a baby, she thinks to herself, as bile rises in her throat. It's a bomb, a fucking parasite, and an apparently useless one at that. Her hands feel light and very far away, wet and slick with blood. She brings them up to the rock, smears it in great swaths of red. The rock does nothing. The sounds above her are getting more desperate. Wake pulls back and punches the rock, hard, feeling the skin over her knuckles split, her new blood dripping down the rock to join the sticky mural already there. She needs more time. Time she didn't really have 9 months ago and definitely doesn't have now. She doesn't look at the dead baby on the floor. She can't. She wants to kill that fucking lictor, wants to wrap her hands around its slender neck and crack it again. She wants to jam her pistol into that lictor's throat and pull the trigger. She had the baby. She killed the baby. It was supposed to work. There's blood on the rock, just like those wizarding fucks told her to do, blood smeared all over, bright red, all fucking red, all she can see, and a dead baby at her feet. She carried this baby, called it bomb, cursed it every time it made her vomit, every time it kicked. She was almost glad to get it out of her, if not for the pain. She was glad to kill it. And it didn't work. Wake drops to her knees, spent. Just as she raises her pistol to the soft underside of her jaw, she hears the mewling scream of a newborn. Wake moves on instinct, but as she levels the gun at the infant, at the bomb, her finger freezes on the trigger. She waits, fully convinced it was just a trick. She's been through a shock. She's lost blood. She's just killed her own baby and she's out of her goddamn mind. Then the infant cries again. The bullet tears through her, its, tiny body before Wake can blink. There's a bang and a wet, sick sound, and the rock is spattered with blood. Again. Blood and bits of flesh and brains and who fucking knows what else. Wake doesn't fucking know. She's not a wizard. The rock doesn't move, though. And Wake is once again raising the pistol to her own throat when the baby cries again. Her hand is frozen on the trigger. Because this isn't real. This can't be real. She lowers her gun, fires it again and again. Each bullet hits home, that tiny body more red than anything else, each time spraying the rock red with blood. But still, the baby does not fucking die. God, child, she hisses. Curse of my womb, product of lies. She has one bullet left in the chamber. She looks at the baby. It looks a little bit like her, in the eyes, the brow. Amongst the mess of blood, Wake can see that she has her hair. She has one bullet left. Gideon, she whispers. Then again snarls it, spits it, curses it. Gideon, you stupid fuck. You should have killed me when you had the chance. She fires. They say you tried to kill me, the girl says. Her hair is red, and she whispers her words into a niche that holds old, dry bone. But I don't know. You wouldn't have done that. I don't think you'd have done that. I think it's just another of their dumb lies. The Reverend Father and Reverend Mother of Dreber had never really liked her, and their accursed daughter even less so. Fortunately, To the other members of the house, she with her golden eyes and refusal to die was like the miracle of spirit the house needed. The birth of the reverend parent's prodigious daughter a year later only served to codify her strange arrival as some kind of miracle. The story was this. 10 years ago, an intruder had dropped in on the ninth with her infant child, causing all amounts of ruckus before killing herself. This was obviously mysterious as hell, and upon trying to call her ghost, they succeeded only in getting her spirit to scream, "Gideon! Gideon! Gideon!" 3 times before fleeing. The child, only a day old, was half dead by the time the penitents of the ninth house had managed to get to her, and even the greatest flesh magicians of the house were convinced she was far past saving. So they wrapped her body in bandages and waited for her to die. When she didn't die, they named her, chipped her, and upon fear that her miracle recovery wouldn't take, had one of the ever-present nannies take her home to be watched over. The constant overprotectiveness became a theme, and even after she had healed and was no longer at risk of dropping dead at any moment, the woman who took her in had kept her. This had the side effect of keeping her away from the other children, so when the creche flu swept through the house, she had been spared. She was known to be a happy baby, always smiling, always putting things in her mouth. The girl has a thin, white scar running across her throat. She doesn't think about it much, no more than she thinks about the slight puckerings of skin at her chest and temple. "I think you loved me. I love you." The words feel strange on her tongue. It's not the first time she's ever said these words, nor heard them, but it feels strange. She's no stranger to love here, but she isn't really in the practice of using the words. She knows her foster mom loved her, before her old heart gave out 3 years ago. She is still in the ground. In another year, when her bones are clean, she'll be folded up into the niche 3 slots over. She knows her swordmaster loves her too, even though the old woman never says it. It's never been a problem. The ninth doesn't really do grandiose displays of affection, and she thinks that suits her just fine. Her foster mom said, "I love you," with every plate of food, every cold night warmed by a soft embrace, every scrape tenderly bandaged after another tussle with the sacred daughter. Her swordmaster says, "I love you," in different, if no less salient, ways. The way she doesn't let the girl get away with slacking, the way she always pays attention to the position of her hands. Here, with the bones in the niche that she doesn't believe could ever hurt her, it feels a little like she's trying on clothes that don't fit. But she wants them to. She rests her great sword against the wall of niches and cracks her knuckles. "Anyway," Gideon says, "Hera was a giant bitch today. Watch how many sit-ups I can do." The end.